This week's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Heavy Play. If you're interested in getting some innovative curved sleeves, or even trying out their Equip Mag system that connects your playmat, deck box, and dice box together with high-quality magnets, check out HeavyPlay.com. Use the code DARKDEPTHS10 for 10% off your order. Again, thank you to our friends over at HeavyPlay.com. Enjoy the show. Thank you to our friends over at Magnolia Gaming, a leading supplier for all things TCG. If you're looking for a place to pick up cards for your next big event, or maybe you just want to do a draft with the new set with your best friends, use MagnoliaGames.com to pick up everything you need from Magic the Gathering, Flesh and Blood, Lorcana, and more. They have an excellent buy list to help you trade those extra modern cards for your first dual land, or maybe that old Angus McKenzie commander deck collecting dust can be traded in for the last cards you need for your collection. And be on the lookout for Magnolia Games at your next large regional event. Use our affiliate code to help support the Dark Depths podcast. Again, go to MagnoliaGames.com and tell them the Dark Depths podcast sent you. All right, enjoy the show. Welcome to the Dark Depths Podcast, your go-to place for the modern and legacy formats. I'm one of your hosts, Billy Mitchell, and with me is the wild card, as always, Michael Matson. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing okay. We are getting toward the end of the school year. I got a little over a month left, so I'm trying to hold on to my shirt here, trying to do my best. It is very exhausting. I got AP exams tomorrow, so if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, please wish us luck. I got another week, and then I've gotten my second round, and we'll be good. So I'm just kind of pushing through. But I'm definitely excited to be, you know, sitting down talking with you. It's definitely a lot better than to teach a bunch of sophomores at this point.
I'm sure the sophomores are doing the best they can.
That cannot be true. Like, I think for some of them, maybe, but I think for a lot of them, it is basically, like, coast while we get through the last month of school.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the best they can do is coast.
It's true. It's tough. And even, honestly, I think disregarding, like, pandemic and stuff like that, like, it's just a school year is a long amount of time, and, like, I feel like by now a lot of kids have checked out. And obviously some kids are still locked in, like, you know, there's kids doing sports, there's kids who are, you know, still, like, trying to make sure they maintain grades because they're on track to be, like, you know, top 10% or whatever, but a lot of them are just trying to, so. You gotta commend it. Gotta respect the game.
10% in the class doesn't matter, right?
I mean, you need Algebra 2 to pass high school, but yeah, I mean, most of them will not be using Algebra 2 trying to figure out complex fractions in their everyday life, so in that respect, yes. But, I mean, it does, again, I always feel like math is an important skill just for the sake of problem solving. I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of, you know, Magic players are good in mathematics and numbers and things like that. So, I don't know. Maybe they just want to be good Magic players. Maybe that's what they really want.
Like, you're saying, like, they're striving for top 10%, but, like, as long as they pass, the rest of
them. No, you get quality points. So, you get more points if you get, like, a higher grade.
So, where's, like, a quality getting point?
So, like, depending on level, so, like, if you are, well, okay, so first off, just base level, like, if you get an A versus an A+, versus a B, minus, whatever, like, it's different points, so even if you would normally get 4 points for the class, if it's a minus, you might not get 4, you might get, like, 3.8, and then that B, like, you know, B is normally a 3.0, so, like, you know, there's a big difference between an A and a B, in terms of that. But also, like, there's, depending if you're doing honors or accelerated, you get a modifier. So maybe instead of, like, if you're in honors, and maybe instead of 4 points, you get 5 points. Or, you know, so an A is still a 5, but, like, a B might be, like, a 4.2 or something like that. So there's still some gaming to be done for kids who are trying to.
Your word for it. Again, I mean, I guess you need, so you're talking about, like, GPA.
Yeah, GPA, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've caught on.
I was saying, like, this cannot be an entirely new concept to you. I was like, I feel like you have to know what I'm talking about. But
I just feel like you were talking about it weirdly.
I mean, potentially. That is very true. It's very much potentially, but...
It could just be that I'm dumb. It could just be that I didn't care enough. I'm not sure. Like, because I did not care in school, so, like, you know, I'm not gonna sit here and be like, oh, I knew everything. I knew enough to pass my classes and, like, yeah, go to college and everything, but, like, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, for sure. You are aware, but not informed. It's like a lot of people doing things in this country, which is why people come to us to learn about quality points in their high school classes that they took 10 to 15 years ago based on our data. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, it does seem like it doesn't really matter for the most part. You're right. Like, I mean, like, most people getting, you know, straight A's across the board and doing their athletics and they're going to get into college regardless. It doesn't really matter if that isn't an A minus or an A for a kid. But, you know, again, a lot of them do have high aspirations and things like that. A lot of them just have, like, my wife was actually this way. And, like, you and I were not this way. And I know that. My wife was very much a, like, I'm taking this, so I'm going to do the best that I can. And I was like, oh, that's a lot of pressure. I am taking this, so I will show up within the first 10 minutes of the class starting. Like, that was kind of where I was at, which unfortunately did not go away as a characteristic, but I still think it's good to, I don't know, to try a little bit. I'm definitely somewhere between where I was in high school and where I probably should be as a math teacher, so... As much as I love obviously talking about high school grade calculations, I know you and I wanted to have a relatively short show, and we say this literally every week, oh, this will be like a quick in and out, and it never is. But this one will actually be an in and out if we can go through our list. And it's not a long list. We're just looking at some cards that have made an impact from Thunder Junction into the Modern and Legacy formats. A lot of cool cards, a lot of cards that we actually kind of mentioned before as things that were potentially interesting. So I'm actually really happy to see a lot of these cards actually making their way into.
Yeah, I will say, probably would have gotten more of the hits had I realized that I should read the big score cards. But I'll be honest, after I read the rest of the cards, I was just too lazy. And then those were the ones that started showing up.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think whenever you're having any of those sets, like, I think still, March of the Machines Aftermath or whatever, like, that small set, which, again, was kind of the inspiration for the big score, right? This additional epilogue-type thing. You end up getting a bunch of cards that, like, are really powerful, but it's just like, I don't know what this is or what I... It's a commander card, probably. I'll just ignore it. And that a lot of those cards get overshadowed, so it's cool to see some of them make the list. Do you want to start off with the first one here?
Oh, like I should read what it is.
Yeah, that's what I was going for, but I can read it. That's fine. It's not a huge deal.
No. I've been tasked. I will complete my task.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah. I do what I can. I'm like a sophomore. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. First one up is Pest Control. Cost Orzhov mana, so a white and a black. Destroy all non-land permanents with mana value 1 or less with cycling 2. I think one of us called this out. I think it was you. I don't know.
I think it was me.
I want to start off by saying I hate this card. It's very good.
Yeah.
I have lost many a permanent to it already. I'm very sick of it. This card showing up in a lot of different places. So the first one that comes to mind is... Allie has been working on a white-black scam deck, and he's featured four of this card in the main deck, but I've also seen it there's an Esper deck that has been popping up that I haven't had the chance to play yet. I wanted to ask you if you've played it. It's like an Esper tempo deck, and people are playing it there, and then I've also seen it in sideboards for like Esper Control and Modern, and just various sideboards, and this card is... really good. And, you know, worst case scenario is you can always cycle it, so it's never dead. But just turns out one drops are very strong. And, like, when you're playing against a card like Urza Saga and it gets to pick off all their tokens and whatever they hit off of the Urza Saga final trigger, and then you are just like left with your entire board. It's kind of a blowout.
Yeah, and like the fact it just cleans up just a bunch of like random nonsense. Like I think being able to clean up, and this obviously in Modern or Legacy, just like there's food tokens laying around, there's random clues, there's I mean honestly, even just like the tokens left over from like something like an Orc Spellmaster. Like that's a very easy and nice clean answer that you can have in your deck. And like you said, it cycles, so like what's the downside? Going back to Ali's list, I always think, again, whenever somebody who is I'm used to playing a certain archetype is like, no, nah, I'm doing this instead. I always think that's super interesting. We obviously like Eli is doing the same thing right now, where he's not playing goblins, playing something else, which is again fantastic. I love people having range. Ali playing not lands, but playing a black white control deck really says a lot about how good he thinks this deck
I
has.
mean, I played with the deck. I'll be honest, I didn't love it, but it definitely did do some impressive things. But still focusing a bit more on the card in particular. Can I tell you about the biggest blowout that I've had so far with this card?
Yeah, please do.
I decided to copy again Mr. Lindblom's earlier list and played some lands, and I just went like turn one, like land, exploration, Mach Simon, Loam, and I'm just like, yeah, we got this. This game's like in the bag. And my opponent just goes like turn two, pass control, and I'm just like, I have nothing. And then I think they force a negation to my life from below. It's like, I have actual nothing.
So good. Yeah, I was actually going to say, like, are you doing the blowing out here, or are you getting blown out? But
No, I got destroyed.
yeah. Which, again, that means that you have a converted mana cost of one or less. So that's come. No, I do like a lot of things that the card is capable of doing, and I think having like a deck that doesn't have one drops in it, because again, like if you're telling me there's oh there's a black white deck that plays Stoneforge Mystic, I'm like, okay, cool. So you're playing, I guess maybe it's like a Mom and Aether Vial kind of thing, and you're playing, and like none of that's in here, right? Like you are entirely ignoring the one drop except for spells. So your reanimate, your ephemerate, all that fun stuff is one mana, and that ends up actually making the deck still. And I think going into the grief troll reanimate package, I think is a really interesting way to kind of take advantage of that deck building challenge there. So very cool strategy.
It's very cohesive. Just like you get to disrupt them early, and then this pest control really just like cleans everything up. I just find I don't enjoy playing the grief scam decks outside of Gorya's Vengeance. That deck is really fun for me.
Yeah, I mean, this is I will have to try this at some point. I've been playing a bunch of random decks, I'm gonna be honest, so I need to start hitting playing the decks and restocking my tickets and whatnot. It's been a mess, but I guess what's next on our list? We had Pest Control, which obviously we were a big fan of. I think the next card on the list was one that was we were talking about last week. I think that was last.
Yeah, so Simulacrum Synthesizer. And let's actually talk about this as a package with some of our other cards on the list, Fomori Vault and Lava Spur Boots. So, Simulacrum Synthesizer, if people weren't paying attention last week, is a 3-mana artifact. And when it enters, you scry 2. And then when you cast, or sorry, when an artifact with CMC 3 or greater enters on the battlefield under your control, you get to make a construct. Lava Spur Boots is a 1-mana artifact that equips for 1 to give your creature ward 1 and haste. And then Fomori Vault is a land that is kind of complicated, but it's essentially card filtering for artifact decks. So 3 artifact cards, and Fomori Vault is only really seeing play in Modern, but the other three have been. Or the other two, sorry, have been tearing it up in both Modern and Legacy. So Simulacrum Synthesizer has kind of spawned a new deck. it's very reminiscent of the Patchwork Zombie decks. It's kind of an evolution where you get to play like Frogmite and Thought Monitor and just kind of go off making constructs. And then having Lava Spur Boots as like a nice saga target has also been huge. That card has just kind of slotted into almost every Urza Saga deck. And then if you're in Modern, the Fomori Vault is just like great card advantage. And I actually wonder if the Legacy decks should be playing it too. The Legacy decks get to play Ancient Tomb, which is obviously very good.
Yeah, I think that's I think it's hard to fight for that many colorless buffs. I don't know how many, I guess, colored pips you really need in the deck anyways, but again, like having... But I do like... I mean, I think Lockspur Boots is, like, one of those cards I did not really expect to see that one get off the ground. Just because, like, a lot of comparisons would be things like... Well, like, Lightning Greaves and... Hexproof, I guess. I don't know. There's another one, too, that's similar to Boots, but actually has an equipped cost. Again, like, Swiftfoot Boots, thank you. And obviously, I think they're both fine cards for what they are, but, like, they're not cards I would consider to be Modern or Legacy playable, but suddenly, dropping it down to one mana makes a huge, huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you can find it off of Urza Saga is really, like, the big, big deal. And then just, like, the play patterns of being able to go, like, turn one Saga, turn two Ancient Tomb, make a construct, turn three, make a construct, get the boots, equip the boots. It's just, like, you generate such a fast clock. Because a lot of times you're just, like, end of turn, make this construct, it's a 7/7. And then you have to, like, pass the turn and let your thing get prismatic ending or whatever. But being able to just go, nope, it's just chalk. It's, like, a lot of damage. And especially currently, like, I don't think people are used to it yet. So, like, they're not necessarily playing around, like, oh, you can put, like, 8 haste power into play on your turn.
Yeah, haste is not typically something I see my robots are going to be able to do. So that is definitely a blowout. But even, like, the word one is also, like, mildly annoying in a format where I really want to maximize my mana. The fact that I actually have to pay one mana for this. On top of, like, a Lightning Bolt or a Brainstorm or a, you know, Preordain or something like that is also super annoying. All right, well, if we got through the artifacts, we should probably... Actually, yeah, we should jump into next card on our list, which is, I think one we talked about last week, too, even, I think, just for the name of the card. Maybe that was 2 weeks ago.
On our set review episode.
Is that review? Okay. Go ahead.
So the next card on the list was Roxanne. Mm-hmm. Why am I blanking on the rest of her title? Starfall Savant. Yeah. This card is sweet. I had it marked as my favorite card. And it's a good pick by me. this card has shown up in Amulet, which kind of had a feeling it might, right? So it's 3 green red. For a 4/3, and when it enters the battlefield or attacks, you create a tapped colorless artifact token named Meteorite. With when that enters, it deals 2 damage to any target and add 1 mana of any color. Which I totally forgot that came into play tapped. I definitely broke the rules yesterday and used it to immediately cast an amulet. Yeah. And to make it kind of okay, it was in a game that didn't matter. Like, we were just playing for fun. But yeah, not ideal. I will keep that in mind and make legal plays moving forward. But anyways, this card is really good. It's people have talked about playing it in the main deck. I think that is too much, but it's a great sideboard card. Probably never leaving my sideboard. It kills Magus of the Moon. So it's a green Sun Zenith target that kills Magus of the Moon, where it also then leaves you with the second green mana source so that you don't just die to a Blood Moon or Magus on the following turn. I played games against Merfolk yesterday, which is kind of a rough matchup for Amulet, which is funny because it used to be one of her best matchups. But it coming down and just being able to kill off every creature in their deck just like turn after turn is really huge. And you know, it does that same thing against a variety of decks. Like, Repeatable Shock is very good.
For sure. And actually, I think it's actually really funny in Amulet, too, because, like, because Roxanne actually puts the meteorites into play tapped, it actually interacts profitably with your Amulet of Vigor, which is a huge benefit. Yeah, that's really nice. Synergies on synergies in that deck. It's wild.
Yes.
Well, that is a interesting card. And again, like, I feel like it shouldn't be that huge of a deal to have that, but, like, the extra mana you're getting from the Mana Rocks is just, like, has to be appreciated, even if it does just jump you one more mana, like, being able to jump from 5 to 7 gets you to Colossus. Like, it's something like that where that could be huge and very easily, I don't know. I like this card a lot. This is a card I've been trying to play in a Commander and haven't been able to work out, but it is definitely proven to be very, very powerful.
The other thing, like you mentioned about it jumping from 5 to 7, that's especially nice, is it's doing it without putting a land into play. So, like, you don't have to play the land from your hand, and now you still have one extra land for that Colossus.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, that by itself isn't a reason to play Roxanne, but it's just nice that all of this kind of works together.
Yeah. I mean, and, like, it's the fact that it's mana ramp also that, like, gets around having, if your opponent has, like, a Damping Sphere or something like that, right? Like, it is an effect that adds mana, but it's not, like, making the land produce extra mana. It's not even producing the mana from a land, right? It's just a little bit extra. I think, again, cards like this that end up, like, not necessarily overpowering an archetype, but, like, just, like, allowing it to kind of evolve and have to be more threatening. Because this is also not to mention the fact that you can just, like, dome people for 2 with the meteorites. Like, I'm okay with that. I'm fine. That seems really great, so.
Yeah, it's been very good for me. Very good. While we're on the topic of Amulet, the next card is Smuggler's Surprise, which is, like, the green sneak attack that we, again, talked about during the set review.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spend too much time on this one because it's not seeing a ton of play, but I will say that Mistaken has 5-0'd multiple Amulet Leagues with this card. Hasn't seemed to pick up yet, but I'm excited to try it. I haven't gotten to play with it yet myself. And, you know, that's kind of exactly what I predicted, I think, is that we'd see it for a bit. Might not be, like, you know, the forever new edition, but definitely capable of doing.
Yeah, and I think fun cards like this, like, because, again, this card is fun, right? I think regardless of what people else want to say about it, like, the fact that it is usable at many points of the game, it has very, I think, seemingly diverse effects. I just think there's a lot of utility here for a lot of people to be doing. So I think this is a card that I'm expecting to just show up just in casual decks at the very least. But yeah, it definitely has the potential, and I'm glad to see Mistaken getting some W's with it. I guess that brings us to, I think, one of my favorite cards in this list, which is the Slick Shot Show-Off. Which has been a super cool one. Have you seen it outside of... I know there's been, like, the red-green deck that's been playing it a ton. That's, like, you know, the deal. I think they're playing, like, Tarmogoyf now. But I've seen the Slickshot in some other builds, too. So, what... Have you gotten to play with this card yet?
I wanted to play with it last night. And then I, like, in paper. And then I remembered I don't own any, which makes it very difficult. And then... Yes. Thinking about it, well, that's not true. I own one. And then later realized I also don't own Questing Druids that I wanted to play with it. So really, I just did a horrible job. But I will.
Yeah.
I plan to take the Prowess deck through a league sometime this week.
Yeah, I mean, that is it's a card that I'm just in love with. I think that's definitely much up my alley for cards I would want to play. I was... surprised to see it just showing up really in a lot of different strategies. I've seen some interesting takes on the deck, trying to maximize different things, but, like, honestly, if at the very least it's a creature that you can put into play, you can hit someone in the face for 1 mana on turn 2 if you want to, or you can plot it and you get another spell to be cast, it's really good. I'm not sure if you've gotten to even, like, face it down yet, but, like, the fact that this is not specifically with a Kiln Fiend, right? That you know, was got a little bigger, a little faster, but also did not have flying, was not able to be cast for, you know, quote unquote for free. There's just a lot to really love about the Silkcloud show off before we even start talking about, you know, pumping it with mutagenic growth and stuff.
I really have not seen it in action.
That's for, I mean, I think it's, again, I'm not a big proponent of the format, but I believe it's showing up in Pioneer as well, as a, you know, premier top end threat. I know it's in Standard. It definitely is going to end up being a card that I think we're going to see for a decent amount of time. I don't think it makes the jump easy, but you never know, I guess.
Can confirm that it is seeing play in Pioneer. I was actually thinking about trying that deck out too. So I do need to start getting ready for a Pioneer season, which has already started. But I have my first Pioneer RCQ coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend. So I have to figure out what I'm doing.
I'm on the Phoenix train for the foreseeable future, because honestly, I do not know what else to do in that format. I have no other skills. I do actually, like, I don't know what with this deck in particular, with the Slickshot show off, it's showing up in a lot of Prowess strategies. I've seen the red-green variant. There's also, like, a Teemer variant that is, you know, still doing the Questing Druid fun stuff, but is also playing, like, Preordains and Expressive Iterations. I think that's a pretty solid place for that deck to start, but I'm assuming there's also, like, an Esper version as well. I thought I saw one. An Esper variant of this. Not Esper, Jeskai. There we go.
Makes more sense.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, it needs to have at least red. We'll at least have that. But, yeah, I'm excited to see where that card goes. Again, I always like having aggressive decks like that in the format, and the fact that we got kind of they got kind of ran out of the gym, I feel like, between, like, Omnath and Solitude and Fury and stuff like that. So it seems like this hopefully is a shot in the arm of the deck. Have some staying power going forward. Okay, you put this card on the list, and I'm not the next card on the list, and I'm not even sure if you're trolling me or not, or if it's actually showing up somewhere. Jace Reawakened, is that actually playable?
Unclear.
Okay.
Like, I'm being honest.
You're being honest. I appreciate it. Yeah.
So, why am I blanking on his name? Young Dingo had played some with this card, and then I believe other people have picked it up. It looks like somebody by the name of Vladimir has played quite a fair bit with this. But yes, so Jace Reawakened. I mean, do you want to read the text on it? It's got a lot of text.
Yeah, it is blue-blue for a Legendary Planeswalker. It starts off with 3 loyalty. You can't cast this spell during the first, second, or third turns of the game. You can pay... It has 3 abilities. The first one is +1, draw a card, then discard a card. The second one is also a +1. You may exile a non-land card with converted mana value... with mana value 3 or less from your hand. If you do, it becomes plotted. And then finally, -6 until end of turn. Whenever you cast a spell, copy it. You may choose new... which, obviously, they're all powerful abilities. I don't want to understate that. I think looting is obviously always good. Being able to cast some of these spells and being able to plot them is, I think, insane. The fact that it adds loyalty while casting a spell is huge. And obviously, being able to copy whatever you're doing. But I just feel like what deck is playing this that, like, you would be happy with? Like, are you trying to, like, plot Planeswalkers, or is it a combo deck?
You are trying to plot Planeswalkers, sort of. So this is showing up in Grixis Control. Like I said, Young Dingo was the first person I saw doing it. That's not saying that he started it. He might have, he might not have. I don't really know. I don't really care, to be honest. But that is where I first saw it. And I don't believe that it's a deck that's putting up many results. Like, I think it falls under the, like, this is fine, you can play it, but, like, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's just fine. But he was combining it with Valky, which is what a lot of people kind of talked about during preview season. So for those who aren't aware of that interaction, you can plot Valky, whatever the card is called, and then, you know, it sees that it has CMC2, you plot it, it's fine, and then the next turn when you go to cast it, you can actually cast Tybalt Cosmic Imposter, so you get your 7-mana Planeswalker for the low cost of 2 mana, which is very good. That being said, you don't get it until turn 5 at the earliest, so it's not, like, that huge of a deal, but you do get to, like, play it and then still have mana up for interaction, so that actually is pretty strong. The other thing that they're doing is they're playing Ancestral Vision, which is a card that's, like, just not strong enough for Modern. But when you combine it with Jace and you just get to go, like, okay, like, turn 4 plus my Jace, turn 5, like, okay, untap, 0 mana, I'll draw 3 cards. Like, 0 mana, draw 3, and your control deck is pretty strong.
And honestly, I didn't really kind of put that together too, but like the fact that Jace coughed 2 mana and can't be played until the 4th turn of the game is not bad, because that means you get to hold up like a counter spell or something like that, maybe a removal spell on the turn that you have Jace in a play. And it, honestly, if the coast isn't clear, you can just like, you know, wait another turn. Like, there's no hurt in waiting in your control deck. So,
definitely seems sick. I'm kind of glad that it's done well, at least, you know. Well, at least okay. Like, I'm definitely glad. Ancestral Vision is a cool card, and, like, it kind of sucks that it doesn't see play anywhere. And, I don't know. I think when you have control decks that aren't just, like, board wipe after board wipe, or, like, infinite counter spells, like, I think they're kind of fun and add something to the game. Like, I think playing against, you know, stereotypical blue-white control, like, or like standard blue white control is like not the most fun, but something like this where it's actually like a mix of threats and answers is like, I think it's an interesting thing to do in the format.
I agree. I mean, like, it's funny too, because like there was a point in time where like you watching someone and like them casting Kalidus, Traitor of Get, was like, oh yeah, that makes sense, we're playing Modern, so why wouldn't you have Kalidus in your sideboard? Like, but like, we're, that was years ago. I mean, like, 7 years ago, right? We were playing with that card in our sideboards. Like, it is cool to actually have a variant of the control archetype in Modern that is at least plays differently than what we've seen. And like you said, it's a better play experience actually having your things like die and be traded off and have to, you know, be blocked by, you know, threatening cards. Like, that at least I feel like is a more enjoyable experience than this. We're getting towards the end of this list. We're close. We've got at least 2 more blue cards, which I'm always happy to see. Can we talk about Sitaru? That was one, I believe that was from the... Is that from the Commander set, or is that from the Big Score as well?
I thought it was just in the set.
Oh, it's just in the set? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Sitaru the Infiltrator. We actually talked about this during our preview show as well.
Yeah, this card's sick. I haven't played with it, but I've watched other people play with it, and I've been very jealous.
For those who don't remember, Sitaru is that 2 mana, a blue and a black for a 2/3 menace. Whenever it or one or more other non-token creatures enter the battlefield under your control, if none of them were cast or no mana was paid or spent to cast them, draw a card. So, relatively simple card, but again, a very powerful effect, if you like.
It's very strong, and I've seen it in a variety of shells. I've seen people playing it with Ninjas, which makes sense. I've seen people playing it with, like, Grief Scam, which is annoying, but makes sense. Yeah, it's been fun just, like, reading the messages from people, but, like, can you imagine, like, being on the play and just, like, turn 2, you get to play this card, and then go grief you, draw a card, then, like, turn 3, reanimate the grief, draw a card. Like, I don't know. It's just kind of dumb.
Yeah, that's what happened. That actually happened to me. Like, I played one league of Modern, and that was literally what happened on like the third turn. They just went Sitaru, grief you, and then not dead after all on the grief. And I was just like, what is happening? Like, I'm like so far behind. Just like, and again, like getting double griefed on turn one is awful, but also like getting double griefed on turn three after I feel like, oh, I've got a plan now. I don't need to just like scrounge for resources, and suddenly my opponent's just like, oh, I'm just gonna draw like two cards and get a 4/3 and a 2/3 both with menace for some reason. It is a surprisingly effective card.
So those homes that we talked about make a lot of sense. Have you seen the blue dredge deck with it as well?
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay, so that one is sick. So that is a Mafaz and Ghost special. I'm sure anybody who plays a lot of Legacy is not surprised to hear that, because he is the dredge master. But he brewed up this blue dredge deck. I'm trying to see if I can find the list real quick. So it plays a lot of what you would expect, but probably a lot of what you wouldn't expect as well. So I'm not going to say the numbers, but the cards in it real quick. Brainstorm, Careful Study, Otherworldly Gaze, Cabal Therapy, Narcomoeba, Thassa's Oracle, Golgari Thugs, Satoru, Poxwalkers, Imps, Bridges, Dread Returns, Hogak, Force of Will, Golgari Grave Troll. One, whenever a combo deck gets to play Force of Will, it's automatically scarier. Yeah. And two, he killed me on, I think it was like turn two, with Thassa's Oracle when I played against him. Sitaru goes like crazy in this deck, because all your Dread Returns are triggering it. All your Narcomoebas trigger it. Let's see, I'm trying to remember. I feel like there's something else that comes back.
Oh, you're just like chaining dredges.
Yes.
Oh, that's very good. Okay. This took me a second. I was like, I don't understand how you're doing this. Like, how are you? Yeah, you're literally just going Narcomoeba. I'll dredge six cards. Oh, look, another Narcomoeba. I'm crushing it. And just like drawing another card, which is also judging you. That's very, very cool.
Yeah. And then, like, if you play your Hogak, then you get to bring back your Poxwalkers, and those also trigger it. And yeah. It was like, it was very impressive.
Yeah, and like, this is, I guess, a random aside, I guess. Like, I feel like there's always a point in dredge where I feel like, okay, I've gotten enough power, I'm good, I don't need to dredge anymore, but it's like, what else is, like, there's nothing better to do. It's really nice having Thassa's Oracle be the backup plan there, where you could just kind of like, yeah, I'm just gonna win the game, I guess. Like, I'll draw four cards and win the game. Like, might as well. Because I guess, well, if you're doing, I guess depending on how it's happening, but like, you're drawing a card off the dread return if you're casting it from your graveyard as well, because you're not spending any mana to play it. So, that also draws you a card? Man, okay, and like, I guess you mentioned Hogak too. Actually casting Hogak, if you're just dredging and convoking, also just draws you a card too. Like, this is like really, really, really potent in the deck.
And notably, no LEDs, so a lot cheaper than a lot of dredge lists. Oh, man. I need to stop looking at it because I can feel my credit card taking a hit.
Let's finish up. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if anybody wants to hear more about that deck in particular, I do want to give a quick shout out to Eternal Dirtles, who I'm also going to give a shout out to later in the episode. But they did have Mafaz on for an episode, and he goes over all of the different dredge variants, and he's got a lot of great insight. And you know, I think if you're interested in this deck, there's no better place to go than the person who made the list and also plays dredge nonstop.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, we got, I think, two more cards then on our list, or yeah, two more cards. Let's start off with the Human Among Us. We can start off with Giraffe, who Giraffe the Fleshrite. Saying that slowly. That was a card we had kind of picked up on too, that was just very, very powerful, and with more not even needing a home, but just trying to figure out a configuration for it. So that ended up making your list.
So, to be clear, it hasn't seen a ton of play, but I have seen it pop up in sideboards here and there. So, definitely something to be mindful of. I've also, the sideboard I've seen it in the most is actually for Grinding Station, which kind of makes sense. Because that is a deck where, when you have Emry out, you're casting multiple spells on a lot of your turns, chaining things off of like Expressive Iteration into Mistress Bauble, let's say, trigger it. Okay, crack the Mistress Bauble, target Mistress Bauble with Emry, replay Mistress Bauble, trigger Giraffe. It's very easy to create a full board. And if something happens to your Thassa's Oracle, maybe you can't kill, but you can just like play Underworld Breach and, or maybe you just don't have a deterministic Underworld Breach, but you can just like play a Breach and then cast five spells and go, here's my army, can you beat it? And I'm kind of thinking a lot of times the answer is going to be no.
Yeah, I mean that is hu the huge thing. I was even thinking like playing this in the sideboard of like just an art like artifact heavy deck, right? We're in modern, we're getting Meltdown soon. Legacy, you already have Meltdown. Being able to just be like, yeah, here's things that don't die to Meltdown. Zero mana though, so good luck. Not artifacts. Like that is also just a huge thing to try to sidestep as an opponent. It's just difficult. Like, I'm not really interested in keeping in too many copies of Fatal Push or Dismember. I'm not bringing that in out of my sideboard specifically for Emery necessarily, right? I might not want to keep them in, but like I definitely want to kill Giraffe or maybe bring in a Wrath effect if I know I have to deal with something out afterwards. Also, was Giraffe a Warlock before, or was he like a wizard or something? Yeah, Giraffe and Githa are both warlocks now. I'm like, that's sweet, that's cool, but I just don't know what they were before. Never really. Anyways, while we're if I feel like if we're starting to talk about lore, I should probably start wrapping up. But I do want to go through the last one on your list, which was Leyline Dowser. What is that card?
Card is a surprise for one, but it costs two mana for an artifact, and you can pay one and tap it to mill a card. You may put an instant or sorcery card milled this way into your hand, and you can tap an untapped legendary creature you control to untap Leyline Dowser.
That seems like a lot of text that does a number of things. I don't know what it actually does in decks though. So what decks is it showing up in?
I laughed at my friend who played against it and lost very badly to it out of a control deck. And then the next day, I played against a control deck with it. And thankfully, I won the match, but I lost game one pretty bad. And I was like, oh, don't let this happen. Yeah, I'm seeing apparently a number of Japanese players are picking this card up. The Japanese meta also often looks quite different than the rest of the world. Sometimes they're ahead of us, sometimes who knows what they're doing, they're just doing their own thing and it works. But figured it was worth talking about it. It's not going to hit 100% of the time when you mill, but you do actually get a lot of ways to control the top of your deck in the format. So I have seen this card with like Surveil Lands. So sometimes you can surveil, leave an instant or sorcery on top, and then put it in your hand for one mana. I saw my opponent Mystic Sanctuary something to the top of their deck and then play this. Trying to remember, they might have had Counterbalance, honestly, which gives you a lot of information about when you can when to time it. Their deck didn't really play any legendaries, but I can imagine getting extra triggers. Well, extra activations rather, could be powerful. So yeah, it's just another piece of card advantage that's fairly cheap and kind of repeatable, so it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like there, like you mentioned, there's just a lot of cards that let you look at the top of your deck in this format. Like, you mentioned a number, but like we also like Brainstorm and Ponder and DRC. Like, there's a lot of good opportunities to look at the top card of your library. Having something like this in your deck makes a lot of sense. I mean, like, I do wonder even, like, if that is something you maybe want to consider. What is that card? Oh my gosh, this is another round of Magic trivia here. Miri's Guile is an artifact, or the enchantment, right? Like, that would potentially be another thing you could use. That, again, doesn't makes a lot of sense to have in a deck. Maybe Sylvan Library is a better option, obviously, because like, being able to actually just have some way to predictably set up your library without having to invest a bunch of mana seems really nice.
The other thing that's interesting about this is if you play with Murktide Regent, it is an instant or sorcery leaving your graveyard, so it does grow Murktide Regent.
Yeah, and at the very least, like, if you don't have it set up and it just is a land or something like that, it still feeds Murktide Regent. Like, it still makes the next one a little bit cheaper, right? So, like, it always is helping your Murktides. Yeah, this card, and again, like, I don't know what deck actually wants the legendary clause on this. Like, I'm not sure what that deck would be. Because I feel like you need to have a high instant or sorcery count, but also have enough legendary creatures that it makes sense. Like, I don't know what that would be, but I'm sure there is something. I mean, like, at the very least, like, it could be like a way that you just tap your legendary creatures, like if you have like a King Bakar or something like that. But again, I'm assuming we're not going to be too inspired to play this in that type of deck. Well, we should probably wrap up. Obviously, there's a lot of cards that we, you know, still didn't get to, we didn't talk about, which is fine. Obviously, like, and I've been seeing, like, the collection, whatever that card is, the white artifact, like, that has been showing up. I've seen the Caustic Bronco showing up in places, too, like.
Oh, I forgot about Bronco.
Bronco's pretty good. I mean.
Yeah.
That is because I know people are using, what, like, Death Mithery or something like that to the dome people for like a bunch of life.
To be fair, I've not seen the Bronco in Modern or Legacy.
Okay.
I've seen it on either side. I've seen it in Vintage and Standard, but not Modern or Legacy.
Ooh, Vintage, bro. I mean, that could make people look gay. Well, that's cool. Well, I'm glad it's showing up. Again, like it's a powerful card. I mean, the set is just really filled with a bunch of, I think, cards that are really interesting, really powerful, like. There's a bunch of cards making waves in other formats as well, like, you know, shout out to Stella being really impactful, and Kumball Profiteering Mayor. I've even seen Annie joins up and Tiny Bone showing up in certain places, like, and same thing with Obeka Splitter of Seconds. Like, there's a lot of really interesting builds that are still working their way out. So I am pumped to see them. Also, shout out to Rakdos the Muscle, which is another card I think that's very, very powerful and very, very cool to see. This was good. I needed this. This was good. This is like chicken soup for the soul here. I think with this, I should go enjoy my soup because I actually do have some hot tomato soup downstairs with some grilled cheese waiting for me. So we should probably get out of here. Mapson, where can people find you?
So you can find me on Twitter at Expedition Map, and then giving my second shout out to Eternal Dirtles this weekend on Saturday. You can find me at, I forget the name of the venue, but if anybody listens to Eternal Dirtles, or even if you don't, Phil Blackman, who's one of the hosts, aka Force of Phil, he has been on leave from the show because he's doing an 80s rock wrestling themed musical. Mm-hmm. And so that is in Philadelphia this weekend. So if any of our listeners are Philly-based, which I know a lot of you are, and you are interested in going, I will also be going. You know, hit me up on Twitter. Maybe we can hang out. So I'm going to be there. Zach Clark is going to be there. That should be a good time.
Very cool.
And where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Bad Luck Bandit. I am not going to be anywhere else, honestly. It's been... I am so busy, but I will be here sitting at my computer and doing fun stuff like that. But I will actually be hopefully making my way out to Ohio in a couple months. A good friend over in Ohio, Rob Wilson of the crew, they're doing BCDL in August. I'm trying to find the date here, but... I am trying to work my way out there to go to Buffalo Chicken Dip Legacy. What number is it? Is it like 14? Jeez, 14. Good for them.
I'm gonna say it's 16.
I guess 16 is the one I'm trying to go to. 14 is coming up, actually. I think it's in 2 weekends, which is really cool. That one is in Hilliard, Ohio. First prize gets an underground theme, which is pretty solid. Top 8 actually gets a 4th of Will. I still want to go to this. If you, at the very least, there is one happening on August 17th, which I'm trying to make my way out to. Definitely, I just love the events are sweet. I mean, like, I don't know what else to tell you. And this one's at the Warp Gates new shop, which I'm excited to see. I love that store. So definitely try to make your way out there. Just, you know, shout out to BCDL. We love them and what they do.
I'll probably be there.
Yep, I'm. You're going, and I know our friend Ethan's trying to go too. Like, it is definitely a good time. We had a blast last time we went. So I'm trying to run it back. I guess with that, we should get out of here. So I'll see you next week.
Devin Maya taps with green, the scene sees reclaimer. Untap sack of flags, don't go seek the planes. Then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Darkness podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mapson on the microphone. Dripping in Mox Diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Set in a forest so dense it looks decomposed. With red LaCrevy knights crush against death shadow. On the legendary lake covered in ice and snow. Underneath the surface looks a lonely evil. An avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The knight lunges forward, going for the kill. But Death Shadow's too tricky, it just won't sit still. Its stubborn denials compile a stack so thick. The bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angling. The knight takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street wraith's fringes, who wanna stuff her out, they don't sneak forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence, a sound so sinister no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor, the looming fear releases growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush, the land goes swept. The night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dryad arbors thaw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition map suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world. Go!